It is Saturday, December 7th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the Central Coast of California. This is KOSP Public Radio 88.9 and KOSP.org. It's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridge of the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. I'm Lyle Troxell. I'm a programmer, photographer, father, and I do some radio hosting as well. And with me in the air room today is Brian Young. He's an iOS developer, designer, lighting designer, and his quote from this morning, which I happen to like, I manage my life through outlines. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Lyle. I am excited to be here today.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. It was fun driving with you, and it's true. Next time we drive in together, we should record that whole thing because it was like a preview of what we'll be talking about. So to some degree, we know what we're doing today.
Hopefully we're not robots now just spewing it out because that was really, really fun.
That was fun. It was fun. Well, that's what we try to do on the show, too. It's interesting. I was listening to 2 weeks ago's show, and I wasn't here. Ben and we had a lot of bees in here. Bonnie and Ben were here, and they're actually covering a story from 3 weeks prior to that about cell phone hacking. And the story that I had actually covered weeks ago, early November, was about this problem about cell phones kind of being really hackable. And actually the antenna systems, the systems that manage the antennas, the nodes, if you will, can be faked. And therefore your cell phone, and it's Ben's story about the cell phone OS, was like a core level OS that actually does the handshaking with the cell tower. And that handshaking and how it's done is now kind of been discovered and really figured out. And it's really clear that it's easy to emulate a cell site and to issue commands like give me your data or reboot or here's a new operating system from the cell site.
And it doesn't matter how secure the overlying operating system of Android or iOS is.
Right, because it kind of happens underneath the covers, if you will, as a secondary OS. And that's the tricky thing about these devices. They become very important to us, very private, and they're easy to hack, which is a problem. And we talked a bit about why, and it's because the cell phone carriers are not, it's not necessarily a responsibility, or maybe it is, and where the problem arises.
But so should we just stop using technology? Should we run into the streets scared?
Possibly, but some of the fear that happened was a listener that emailed in, and Bonnie and Ben addressed this issue last week, or 2 weeks ago on the show. And the issue they had was, wait, if you talk about it on GeekSpeak, then everybody will know, and terrorists will take advantage of this and do bad things to our networks. So Ben handled this pretty well last week with a kind of a – I'll summarize his discussion about – or 2 weeks ago. I'll just summarize Ben's perspective is GeekSpeak does not lead with stories. We aren't journalists in the sense we don't do our own research. We pick up on stories that are interesting, and we try to explain a little more technically what's going on. So a lot of our stories are very much in the public eye already. And even stories that are kind of not in the public eye, they've already been publicly disclosed pretty – widely. So Ben's perspective is, since we're not breaking anything, we have no responsibility. We have no culpability because it's already public.
So the terrorists aren't looking around on news groups. They're listening to GeekSpeak, and that's where they're finding out exactly. the really dangerous stuff.
No, that's the point Ben was making, is that we're not the lead, so it's okay for us to talk about. So while I was listening to Ben and Bonnie's show, which I thought was great, 2 weeks ago, I think it's second show in November, and what I wanted to participate. You know, I know that a lot of people listen to GeekSpeak and they go, oh, I want to say something right now. And they don't. I normally get to say what I want on GeekSpeak, right? Because I've been doing it for 13 years or something. So when I'm listening in Cannes, I was actually in France. So I was listening, but I wasn't able to participate. I want to say that there's actually a philosophical point that I want to make, that it's the reason we do GeekSpeak is to bring the technical discourse into a public frame perspective so that anybody, not even a geek, can understand these geek issues. So that's the reason GeekSpeak exists. So it's essential that we, on this program, understand the technical ideas, bring it into a social context, and can then discuss it. And the ramifications of that are change. That's the hope, is that as the average audience knows that privacy is not as private as you think, or security issues arise, and this is why things happen, and what we need, then there'll be motivation by government to make fixes, or companies to make fixes. And that's why I want it to be transparent. You want to say?
Oh, you beat me to it. Okay. I was just going to say, so what can the average person do about it?
Yeah, right. Well, I think that what happens is as the average person is aware of these concerns, policy changes. They, you know, Facebook's been notoriously bad on privacy to some degree, right? So they make this effort to make their app have settings where you can do privacy. And then they make mistakes. Like this week, there's actually a story we're not really going to cover deeply, that it doesn't matter if your friends are private. Actually, you can discover who has friends with who. You know, this kind of... These
but
things
they have a
emerge.
Reputation now, so they have to...
They have to protect it, right. Yeah. They have to jump on these things. And we're actually going to see this theme emerge throughout the episode today about different spaces where geeks knew the problem, we understood it, and we can explain it. And in doing that, change will take place. That's the hope of Geek Speak. That's my personal philosophy.
This is the thing I always get my hackles up about. People are always scared about hackers and stuff. They talk about white hat hackers and black hat hackers and gray hat hackers. And we've had plenty of stories about scary hacking and different worms and viruses on our computers. But in the end, if we know about the stuff, we can change it. If we don't know about it,
yes,
nothing's
exactly
going to change.
Right. So that story from 3 weeks ago about cell phone sites being hacked, I didn't know about that story until that week, right? Now we know about it, and that's going to change. It has to, right? There's a serious problem. And so it might not have changed if just a small set of geeks knew about it. And that's, we'll touch on the feed. So let's go ahead and, yeah?
Oh, just something I noticed, just to demonstrate this, because whatever you think of Edward Snowden and the revelations that have come out of his leaks, there are a lot of projects on the internet going on right now that are increasing security for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to hear more and more about those over the next year or two. And that's a very direct example of how that's going on.
Yeah. You know, in fact, I want to address one, because while the Snowden leaks happened, the geeks tried to figure out what's going on from these public documents. Because, of course, it was a slideshow that was first released. And the slideshow inferred some ideas that technically would have been very infeasible. And there were some assumptions that geeks were making that showed that this didn't make any sense. And then as we started figuring it out, we go, okay, it must be this way. And then as more information was revealed, yes, it sure is. And this has to do with things like in the slides, they were clearly that it's really easy for the government to actually look at Google data. And we're like, no, that doesn't make any sense. There's no way that could happen. And then if you looked into it further, you found out that Google is actually mirroring all their data through private leased fiber optic lines, which means that theoretically that fiber optic line is theirs and there's nobody else can look at it. Therefore, they were not encrypting all that data. They were sending it in the clear because it's a pipe that they owned. Well, the government was actually splicing that pipe and getting a copy of all the content.
Google may own it, but they're not looking at every inch of it along the way.
Right. So therefore, now Google, of course, is very, very quickly changing to encryption on that channel, so that it doesn't matter if it gets, it's interesting because this mirrors sci-fi all the time. There's all these examples in sci-fi, but that's an example of we don't know that we didn't, outside of Google, we were not privy to how they were traveling, sending data along their private pipes. They don't publish that information. They're a corporation. That's part of their trade secrets. That's all this internal stuff. So there was no way for me to know that was a fault in their design. I wouldn't know about it, right?
Well, we know the reputation. They tend to be
extremely conscious. Oh, they're very good at their security model, right? And staff that you talk to that work at Google, even friends of mine, they don't talk about what they do, right? They're very... very careful about security.
But
it's just good.
Culturally, it's really interesting because 2 years ago, most of this stuff, if you mentioned it, people would just be thinking you're a tinfoil hat extremist going over the edge. But now all of this stuff is really understood better.
Right. So now because of Snowden's revelation and sharing with the government knew that the government figured this out to some degree, some oriented part of the government figured this out. Google, of course, is reacting, but we are all also reacting as well, all over the place. In fact, there's a fundamental way that SSL could work. SSL is the privacy between your bank and your browser.
It's that little lock in the upper
little green
corner
lock,
of your
right.
Browser.
And when the Snowden stuff came out, it was clear that data was being seen, and all the geeks were like, no. The only way, and after discussion, no, that couldn't happen. SSL's not broken. That's fine. The only way we could do that is if you had the keys. And then we all went, oh, the government gets the keys from these companies. That makes sense, right?
And if they don't get them now, they get them later, and they go back in their warehouse and start looking at it all.
So what they do is they look at all the traffic that's encrypted, and then 3 years later, they get the key, and they can get all the data. Simple. Well, there's actually a different type of protocol called perfect forward privacy in SSL. Perfect
forward secrecy.
Perfect forward secrecy, which is part of the SSL spec, but it's not always used, and we're seeing the network change that direction. And it actually uses this thing called the Diffie-Hellman cipher, and I can actually describe the Diffie-Hellman cipher to people. What? So possibly, if you're interested in that and what it means to have complete secrecy even in the future, even if the data is being unencrypted later, you can still have secrecy. How would that work? And if you're interested in other things of that nature, please feel free to call us the entire episode today, which is only about 45 minutes left. The phone number is not the one on the wall over there. I'm going to close my eyes and say it's 1-800-655-5877. Again, I'll do that slow. 1-800-655-5877. And as we're doing call waiting and all that, let's talk about some robots, shall we?
It's robot day.
It is.
Okay, Skyjack.
Yes. Right? Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that first. So droids are in the news right now because of the Amazon story, which we'll talk about in a second. But let's go ahead and lead with the Amazon story. Okay,
I read this thing. I'm a little bit nervous talking about this because this week Jeff Bezos got a lot of publicity.
Owner of Amazon
got a lot of publicity. I'm not saying that right. About saying that he believes that Amazon will start delivering packages through semi-autonomous flying drones or flying robots.
Right.
From his warehouses, from the Amazon warehouses, within 10 miles to customers in a half an hour from ordering. So instead of running down to your big box store and getting stuck in traffic in a line for an hour trip, his intention is to have these flying robots drop off packages to you within a half an hour of ordering. The reason why this is a big publicity thing is because we're nowhere near, in the next couple of years, having these things flying. It's
right.
Going to take a good 5 years before the technology is ironed out enough that we can trust it flying over densely populated areas, dropping the package in the right place without the blades chopping up your dog, and things like that. So the other big problem with that, and this may be the reason why he wanted to talk about it now, is because the FAA has a say in this. They have not cleared these drones to fly over
populated areas.
So I don't want to feed the publicity, but there's a real story here about how this really could happen and some other uses for it that are maybe even more important.
Now, we've already seen these things being used in rescue operation stuff, right? Dropping supplies off.
Yes, I believe it was in Haiti. And that company, if I understand right, that was Matternet. So,
and I think we covered this on GeekSpeak, but I can't recall.
So the founder of Matternet, I'm not going to get his name right.
That's fine.
Raptopopoulos.
Nicely done, sir.
Thank you. He was talking about how Jeff Bezos makes the comment, and he's getting his phones ringing off the hook. He runs this startup that their goal is to set up a distributed network of autonomous drones to deliver packages in areas of the world that don't have a transportation system,
plus right.
Disaster areas, third world countries that infrastructure is not set up yet. So what does that mean, a distributed network? So it's like the internet. We've got all of these computers spread out across the world. When you go to Amazon and connect to the Amazon website, the website is loading up information from a computer somewhere close to you, but that information is in several computers all around the world.
Right.
And sometimes when the close computer doesn't have the information, it is going out and talking to one of these other right. computers around the world.
And so in fact, just the connection between you and that Amazon server, there's multiple hops of routers in between, which are computers, basically, hardware computers, that translate that data and move it along. And if one of those gets taken out, there's actually other routes, potentially.
Yeah.
So the distributed systems are really robust.
So you see this all throughout the internet, and all you do is you say, I want to look at Amazon, and all of this happens, and you don't have to think about it.
Right. Or geekspeak.org. You said you didn't want to do publicity for Amazon. So
you're a good point. Thank you. So the way this would work is there would be different stations for the autonomous drones, and you would say, I need this medicine, some initially high-value, low-weight cargo. And the system would figure out the fastest, most efficient way to get the medicine from wherever it is to you.
I see.
And it'll set up several drones linked together so that one drone will get it 10 miles, and then it might replace its battery and then get the next 10 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, it drops off a package to another drone that's going to go and make the next hop.
And of course, if you did this intelligently, it wouldn't always be drones that were flying it. You could also use, there might be a stretch of road that can take care of it, and there might be a van that goes regularly along. So the drones would drop off of someplace, things get folded into a van, traveled for a while, or there's a boat trip. I mean, there's you could do this with multiple transports. This is kind of the donkey nut scenario of email transfer as well, but we won't get into that.
Well,
it's
also based on, the Pony Express. Didn't have one pony going all the way across country.
Right. A whole bunch of different ways of doing it, yeah. Cool. So distributed. So what that story really kind of enlightens is that there is this potential for using semi-autonomous robots to deliver stuff. And it might not make sense in the U.S., where we already have really good roads and we have a densely populated area. But for emergency situations or medicine delivery in a remote area that has difficult infrastructure, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We'll probably see autonomous vans driving up to our house first.
We probably will. It's true, because we've got good roads.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's actually really expensive from an energy perspective to fly things.
It is, but it is a lower cost than you would think for this sort of stuff. But yes, high value, low weight items will be the first things for sure.
Right. iPhones flying around. So, okay. Because of that, this story about drone hacking hit coverage, big coverage, around the same time. In fact, Sami Kamkar, who is known for the Sami worm, he's a coder and hacker who developed an exploit that took advantage of browsers' insecurities to take down MySpace. I don't remember MySpace. And it was a cross domain execution of JavaScript that allowed basically lots of friends to exist on MySpace too quickly, and it caused the system to crash. And he did that very publicly and shared what he did and talked about the problems with the situation. The worm was called the Sami worm, and it was kind of noted as the first Web 2.0 worm, because it took advantage of browsers insecurity, not the root computer. Like, he didn't actually root people's computers. He didn't do that. He just made the browser do things that are slightly different than what they should be doing.
So he's a hacker. He must be an evil guy, right?
No, he's an awesome guy. But what's interesting is that his drone hacking, called the Skyjack is the name of it. And he made a great video, and he open sourced the project on his GitHub repo. And it's called Skyjet. It uses Node.js. And what was interesting, because when I heard the story, I'm like, yeah, I know. Drones are easy to take over. That's not a big deal. In fact, a conference that you and I participated in, well, I actually ran, and you participated in October, the guy that I invited to, Adam, came, and he brought some drones, and his demo was showing how you can take over these drones and make a semi-autonomous network of these drones, and he was doing it by hacking, in the sense that he was just uploading code to them to have them execute. And the reason why that was known is that when we were both at NodeConf earlier in the year, there was at the end of one of the days around the campfire, some people were like, okay, let's throw all the drones together. They put them down in the dirt, and one laptop took over and all of the machines got taken over, and they didn't have any authentication rules. They just did it because there's no root password for these things.
Unlike what we saw at JS Everywhere.
Yeah.
At JS Everywhere, he actually got his USB stick into the drone.
Yes, he did it a different way.
He took it over by rewiring it. Mm-hmm. But this happened just over the Wi-Fi network?
That's right. Because what's going on with these drones is that they're a toy, okay? Let's be really clear. The drones we're talking about are a toy you can buy for under $200 that flies. And it's semi-autonomous. We'll talk about that in a second. But the point is that because it's a toy, you can do things with it. And there's no security, really. Like, you can log into it remotely through Wi-Fi. This is how you actually update code to it and do things with it. So at NodeConf, the demo that was done was a group of people that had spent the day figuring out how to hack these things, and for that hack to propagate against multiples of them. So this exploit of taking over drones and doing exactly what Sami Kamkar has done with this thing called Skyjack and got all this press, I knew about in May because I saw it. In fact, people that were more familiar with drones knew that trick even earlier than that. But the point being that just because I knew about it in May did not make it be something that I talked about on Geekspeak, right? Because, yeah.
Well, and did it seem scary to you?
No. I didn't. But there's nothing scary about hacking for me. It doesn't feel like scary. What's scary is that companies don't close those holes more effectively.
But when the media sits there and covers this story, you see all these headlines about drones being taken over and used for malicious purposes.
Right.
At least that's the subtext.
That's
of
the
every
subtext,
headline.
Right. So first off, calm down. We're talking about toy drones, right? We're not talking about these piloted things that shoot people in military situations. They
but
happen to have the same name.
But it's called a drone. What's a drone?
An AR drone is actually a small toy. It's lightweight. You can, if it flies at you, you can grab it and turn it over. It's got a sensor in it that when you actually flip it, it will shut down completely because it thinks it's crashed. So when these things are flying around, you can just grab one and flip it over. It's not a big deal. Now, the ones that they sell as toys have a foam protection sleeve around it so that it won't hurt your fingers. But I've been hit by the blades. It doesn't chop your fingers off. You know, there's nothing dangerous about these. Now, the ones that you'd see Amazon build if they really do the package delivery would be larger, and they would potentially be dangerous.
Well, they have more rotors. So the one we saw has four rotors, and so they don't have to spin as fast or be as long, and therefore can't hurt you as easily.
Right.
The Amazon's that they've shown, it has eight rotors. It's going to carry more weight. It's still going to be faster spinning, but it's probably going to be the same thing where if it hits you, it's not going to be that big of a deal.
You know what? Before I started this whole story about AR drones and hacking and all that, I should have gone to a break. So we're going to do that now. We'll be right back and talk more about it.
KUSP is supported by Mira Software Services. 1,500 software geeks in Western Russia who provide engineering support for IP telephony, networking, and unified communication. Details at mera.biz or 650-479-5350.
You're listening to Geek Speak. We're taking calls today, 1-800-655-5877. I'm Lyle Troxell, and the air room with me is Brian Young. Next time on the 7th Avenue Project, the mind of a mathematician. KSP's Robert Pauley talks to Cedric Vivillon, winner of the 2010 Fields Medal, equivalent to the Nobel Prize for Mathematics. What's the relation of math to physical reality? What was it like working for 10 years on a single equation? Why does Vivillon love comic books? And why does he dress like a 19th century dandy? All that and more on the 7th Avenue Project. Tomorrow here on KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Geek Speak is a registered service mark by David Lawrence and is used with permission. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. We already have one person on the line, and we'll talk with them in just a minute. But first, I want to complete that story about drones and robots, flying robots. I mentioned... So the point being, the kind of overall point being, if we don't make it extremely public that these security vulnerabilities exist, change will not happen. That's essential for one of the core features of GeekSpeak. We talk about these issues. The guy, you know, Sammy Kamkar, who actually made very public this thing called Skyjack, which takes over toys that happen to fly. Let me be really clear. They're just toys. It's interesting because we knew about this. In fact, I personally knew about this exploit for months. It wasn't news for me, even though I'm a news junkie and I talk about tech on GeekSpeak all the time. And the reason it wasn't news was that it was neat, but it wasn't scary. It wasn't dangerous. And also, most people, when I talk about how you actually root a device and understand root permissions, people glaze over a bit. So we didn't talk about it. But now, because Amazon's mentioning that they want to be autonomous delivery potentially in the future, and it becomes this major story, I want to be clear with you that all that this kind of exploit problems exist all the time. It doesn't mean that in a production environment it will have an exploit. But importantly, that's one of our features here, one of our functions here. Now, semi-autonomous robots. Why are drones called semi-autonomous robots? And Brian, as we were driving, you used a metaphor for a human being, which I thought was fantastic. Would you describe?
Well, yeah, I'm driving around all the time, taking my kids somewhere or doing something, and there's certain things I do all the time. Whenever I leave my my neighborhood, I always turn right, except for when I intend to go somewhere else.
Right.
If I'm talking to my kids or wrapped up in some thought, I'm going to turn right whether I intended to or not. It's just because muscle memory and my subconscious says this is the way I normally go. In absence of something telling me otherwise, I'm going to go that way.
Yeah, which is an amazing feature of the human ability. I mean, if you take a cup of tea, a cup of hot tea, and you fill it up almost to a quarter inch to the top, if you then walk down the hall, an adult walks down the hall, you probably won't spill that tea. If you look at your hand and make sure you don't spill that tea, you will almost definitely spill that tea. And the reason is that our conscious mind is actually not very good at these agile things. That's why it takes practice to play the violin. It's not like you can think exactly how to play the violin. You have to train your body so it can do it. And this process is really amazing. If you have a skill that's really complicated and you're really good at it, typing is a perfect example of this. You're doing it without thinking about it. That to me is semi-autonomous, right? And that's the kind of idea of these, especially like a drone, these toy flying devices. What they can do is they can get up into the air and stabilize, right? They can even stabilize in a slight wind. They can even stabilize if you push them slightly, they'll stabilize. And what I mean is It used to be that flying helicopters, for example, you go up and they go up until they crash. These things will go up until they are off the ground. They have a sensor beneath them.
So the remote isn't like a joystick in the same way that a helicopter, RC helicopter is. It's really cool, and I've seen friends flying this AR drone around. Yeah. They hit the flip button, and it's just a button. It's not a real control. And the whole thing just flips in midair.
Right, and the complexity to do that is pretty great. You've got to advance the rotors on all three of the rotors to get a little bit more height. Then you have to invert the rotors on one half and increase the rotors on the other half so that it can flip. And then after it's gotten to about its apex, you have to reverse that so it can stop itself.
Right? And it's not based on timing. It's actually sensing its
right. It's rotation. It's yeah. And so to do that, for a human being to do that, to get all the controls to do that would be very difficult. Like, you need a lot more hands and more brain power. But to program that into the processor of the machine with all the feedback loops, really smart. That's the semi-autonomous nature of it. It can do things like that. Okay. So that's the point about semi-autonomous vehicles or semi-autonomous drones. And that's true with vehicles and a lot of different things. In fact, all computer systems, you make a balance between what the user controls and what the computer controls. And that balance can be either creepy or really elegant.
Well, right? Just like our own subconscious can be really creepy or elegant.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So because we're talking about robots and all that, In a minute, we'll talk a little more about, we'll cover more of that as well. But let's go ahead and take Martine from Ben Lomond, as I don't have my finger on the button. Martine, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. My pleasure.
I'm calling about something that we've talked about kind of, outside, but so I have to kind of let everybody know what I'm asking.
You know what? I'll do that real quick, just because I know a lot about the story, of course. Martine's a friend of mine. She lives in Ben Lomond, my hometown, and you sent me a note on Facebook asking about solar panels and controlling EV wire for a costume.
Electroluminous wire.
Yeah, and I almost responded, call on GeekSpeak. But instead, I give you a little bit of a write-up. Now, it was short. It was truncated because I was really quite busy this week, so I didn't give you really clear. But I think we got to the point that the problem with doing that is that the amount of current, the amount of power you can get from a solar panel just isn't really enough to run EV wire. So what's your question?
Yeah, and I understand that. I have kind of a vague general understanding of how electricity works. what I want to know is there any other technology that is capable of putting out current remotely so that it doesn't have to be hardwired and plugged into a wall?
How about a battery?
I don't want to have batteries because you have to replace them all the time, and it's a pain.
Well, I mean, you can get lithium batteries, right? They take a lot of charge. You can use multiple charges of lithium batteries, so rechargeable batteries, right? That's one way to do it.
Disposable batteries.
They'll last longer than disposable batteries. Yeah, you can get like hobby shops at like Adafruit or SparkFun. These are two websites that actually have all these really cool components. They'll have like flat pack batteries, basically batteries that are in cell phones with different types of containers, and then you can buy those and recharge them. But you got to do a little bit of like electronics around it, and they will run out eventually.
Do they come with the electronics to manage the overcharge? And
Sometimes the battery itself has some management features, but you do have to give it the right amount of current. Normally what would happen is if a company like this sells a battery like that, they'll also sell the component necessary to charge it, or even a wall wart to charge it.
And the regulator, yeah.
So let's say you really don't want to have batteries. You just want to be able to be in an environment that these stuff lights up and no batteries at all. A battery is a chemical reaction, so I could say, just use capacitors. But that doesn't solve the problem. That's the same kind of issue. So there is another way to do this. And that has to do with radiation, right? So you can use some kind of thing that radiates energy to the device, and then it will light up.
Microwaves.
And microwaves are an example of this. You could use, thermonuclear kind of energy, but you don't want to do that because it'd be bad for your skin. You can also use an AM antenna. And you could use an AM antenna to power it. Now, the amount of power you'd need... There's a lot of loss when you're doing this kind of RF. The amount of power you'd need would be quite a bit to do EV wire. But more importantly, people that live next to AM stations, they know this problem because they can. You can take like a neon tube that's not powered or like a fluorescent tube in a light fixture, and you can hold one end and you'll be the antenna of the AM signal and the whole thing will slightly glow. So that's why I know it's possible.
Is this a non-ionizing radio?
Yeah, it's non-ionizing. AM and FM radios are all non-ionizing, which means what he means by that is it doesn't actually make chemical change. So it's radiation that can't affect chemical bonds. That's non-ionizing radiation. Safe, basically, is what. So I would suggest lithium batteries.
Is this something that I can find at a Radio Shack or,
an AM transmitter? An AM transmitter that would do this? You could build it, but we're talking about like major amount of current you need to put in the antenna. So what you do is you produce a high frequency energy up and down a metal rod, and that's, we call those antennas. And you'd strap that to your wall, and we'd put in, let's say you got like a 30 amp antenna or 30 amp power amplifier that does high RF amplification, and you'd put that in your wall, and then you put your signal in, which would basically just be a carrier frequency. And then you could stand 5 feet away from it with another antenna of the same approximate length or some resonant frequency of that length. So it could be shorter as long as it had a resonance frequency. And then you'd get current out of that. Now, how much you'd get...
Large devices.
How much you'd get would... Well, no, the antenna could be along your body. You could put a piece of wire along your body, and if it's about the right length, it would get some... But you'd attenuate. You'd lose signal.
Can you focus or direct the energy?
Yeah, you could do a little bit of focus. Not very much.
AM's not very focused.
No, but more importantly, that would be against FCC regulations. Because there's only some bands that you could use radiation that's not licensed. So the reason why KUSP is on air is because we have a licensed band, 88.9 in Santa Cruz and Monterey area. And we have other bands as well. And then that means that we're the reserved owners in this area of that band. Now,
so it might interfere with radio signals and other RF devices.
Yeah, if you did this, it would interfere. Now, there are bands that are not regulated. In fact, the microwave band is one of those. And the microwave band is not regulated because it's just a really not very efficient way to send data because of the amount of water in our atmosphere. It's the same resonant frequency as water, so it's not very good. I know I'm going really fast here. I'm sorry.
I can listen to it on the podcast.
Yeah, so that frequency is fine. Unfortunately, because that frequency actually warms, it interferes with water, it will heat you up as well. So doing that high power is not a good idea unless you're cold. And then...
all this is theoretical. The only practical answer for her is batteries, right?
No. Practically, you could totally make a room that radiate enough energy to do this. Yeah, you could. If for like an art project, yeah, totally. Okay. I would use a frequency to be different. I'd also don't make it a public product because then FCC is going to nail you, and also be aware that your neighbors will hate you if you use a frequency that happens to be one that they are using for other purposes.
So build your Faraday cage at the same
time. Exactly.
My ultimate goal is that I'd like to sell the piece to someone and then they can take it home, hang it on their wall, and it will light up.
Batteries. Okay. All right. Wait. This is good. So you want to have a piece of art that hangs on a wall that a person mm-hmm. that lights up regularly, that a person does not have to plug in.
Right.
Do you just want to hide the wire or you want the convenience?
Get a drill.
Well, it would be all right, I guess, if it was just a wire that ran down the wall.
All right. Have you seen like wireless toothbrushes? They use this technology.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
No, they use magnetic.
That's the thing is that equip. What Brian's about to describe.
I don't know as much about electronics.
So if you have a coil of wire and another coil of wire, and you put power in one coil, the other coil will also have power. And it's inverse polarity, and it has to be alternating current. And we call these things transformers. And the distance that they function has to do with the magnetic distances. So you're familiar with the magnet. If you take a magnet and go to a fridge and it has a short amount of distance, that's the kind of ratio that magnets fall off at. Therefore, that's kind of the distance you need to deal with this type of thing. This is actually equivalent.
Well, if it was within 6 feet of the plug in the wall, it would work?
You're getting more into the RF transmission instead. But equivalently, it's actually the same mechanism, electromagnetic mechanism. Electromagnetic radiation is the same thing. So it's just that when you do high frequency, you can inject a lot more power into it, and therefore get a more distance than higher current. You know, I think we're going outside the scope of how I can do this on air.
Quick question. Here's an idea. Yeah. Could you do this through 6 inches of a wall? Maybe the one side.
I think six inches would be really pushing it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean,
because if you put it on the back side of the wall, you'd hide your wires
right.
That way.
It's going to fall off at a distance ratio. But no, I think the way that I do this in art installs when I need power is I run cables on or inside the wall. That's the answer. Now, you can beam sound, ultrasonic sound, and maybe get some power, but that still is going to be so much loss. No, the way to do this is, and you know, the reason that we know this is the case, that this is the solution is a battery or a cord, is because you can look at consumer products and say, what consumer products do this? Picture frames that flip out, digital picture frames are a perfect example of this. They don't actually use a lot of power. You can feel them. They're not very hot, but they always have a plug, and this is why. Sorry.
That's okay. That's exactly what I want to know. I don't want to waste a bunch of time trying to do something that it can't be done.
You could also do it with photons if you wanted to and have a really high, powerful beam of light or ultraviolet or infrared light across the room hitting it. You could do it that way as well. But we're talking about some serious power loss. Lots of power loss if you want to do it remotely.
That's kind of the way your TV remote works.
No, the TV remote does carry, it is infrared. It does send a little bit of data, but it's very, very little power. In fact, so much is almost the same as the noise floor of a room. So, I think we're going to go on, Martine. Thank you so much for the call.
Okay.
That was fantastic.
That was wonderful.
If you have a crazy question about an art project and want to know how to do it, give us a call. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. We're going to talk a little bit more about robot research and possibly about 23andMe in just a minute. But it's time again here on GeekSpeak for another quick break. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. On the phone from Santa Cruz, we have John. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Your previous caller, she might consider something that winds up or a gravity-based generator.
Good idea.
Old-fashioned.
Oh, Martine, yeah. So take a giant disc of gold or some heavy metal like lead, or giant disc of that, and then just have a zip line and just get that thing going to really high RPMs and then just slowly trickle off the current you need from that. And then you only have to pull it. I think that lithium batteries would probably last longer depending on how big you can make this. Also, if this thing fell off the wall, it would kill your cat. It would hit the ground and it would rotate and it would be a mess. Yeah. That's
well,
a good idea.
Working though. With very little energy to begin with. I mean, like they have these new flashlights that you hang a bag of dirt on, and as it sinks down like a pendulum, is turning a generator and generating light. I don't know how much she's expecting.
Yeah, unfortunately, she's using a thing called EL wire, and it has a large current consumption, unfortunately.
Yeah. Can't plug it into a potato.
Yeah, I mean, LEDs, though, generally could. She could switch over to LEDs and not have as much power consumption. You're right. That would be good. Okay, what was your question, John?
Actually, just a statement. You're really concerned about how people perceive what you're doing with the hack on these toys, but if the person's going to go ahead and call it skyjacking, I mean, that's going to immediately excite the imagination.
Yes. In fact, that's why he called it skyjack. He wants to make it public, and he scares people with it.
You labeled him a publicity hacker earlier?
Earlier in the car, I said, oh, he's a publicity hacker, because my perspective was, we know about this quote, threat of being able to take over Toy Jones. I've known about this for a long time. I didn't think of anything of it. It's not scary to me. But he made all this press around the same time Amazon talks about drones, and therefore became this giant public consciousness. The truth is, I want the public to be aware that vulnerabilities are problematic, so that companies change their policies and government makes sure that things get locked down. If we don't tell anybody about it, how will people have pressure to get it locked down? So I don't like the idea of using fear to do that, and this guy did. So that's an interesting question, I guess.
So the media uses fear to get our attention so they get money.
Yes.
And he's feeding into that. So isn't he just perpetuating the system we hate?
Right.
Yes, he is. That's why I called him a publicity hacker. But I don't know. Maybe this guy, I mean, I also think he's kind of cool. I like that he shares it publicly. I like, you know, it's important for people to be aware of it. Also, he's taking advantage of our semi-autonomous nature of fear. He understands that. You know, that's why fear works for us, right? Because we have automatic responses to fear that we can't understand. And we can't understand it because it actually participates in a different level of our body than our consciousness. When you come behind somebody and you startle them, their body will move. They didn't decide to do that. That's semi-autonomous, and it's external semi-autonomous control. So from that perspective, he's hacking us with his name. And I kind of respect that as well.
So he is using the system we're trying to stop. And,
so and wouldn't it be better to use like a word like commandeer, which, you know, has a semi-concern to it, but it doesn't exactly, you know, cause you to jump?
If he used commandeer, I wouldn't be talking about it on Geek Speak today.
Maybe that would work in the BBC.
Yeah, that's true. Commandeer.
You're really concerned about perception as well, though.
I am.
So I guess the whole system here is he has to get people's interest and we have to calm them down?
Okay, I think so you need both.
You need a little bit of both. The problem for me, of course, is that there's this general malaise that people have about technology, right? They go, oh, I don't understand. It's confusing. It's complicated and scary. I don't want people to have that feeling about technology. I want them to be excited and love it like I do, right? But I know that I'm an anomaly, that my passion for it is different than most people, and that's okay. So what I try to do is share my passion with it, get people excited about it, and when complicated or scary things emerge, try to explain it enough so that it's not as scary and it's not as complicated, and people have a feeling that, the future is bright and potentially we'll work things out. So I guess I'm an optimistic person, and yes, that Skyjack thing kind of disturbs me that he named it that, but it is effective.
Indeed.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye,
John.
Sometimes things really are scary, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, is the government intruding too much? Maybe.
Someone's got to keep an eye on it. All right, so Microsoft recently, yeah, I'll definitely lead into that story. Microsoft recently made some announcements, and this is a head person at Microsoft, right? Made a public statement, and what's interesting about it is they're talking about why they're encrypting a whole bunch of data all of a sudden. They're doing a lot more security focus. And the statement they said is, in particular, recent press stories have reported allegations of governmental interception and collection without search warrants or legal subpoenas of customer data as it travels between customers and services, or between company data centers in our industry. He's talking there about the Google thing I talked about earlier. If true, these efforts threaten to seriously undermine confidence in the security and privacy of online communications. Indeed, government snooping potentially now constitutes an advanced persistent threat alongside sophisticated malware and cyber attacks. Now, he didn't say the U.S. government in this blog entry from Microsoft, but he's clearly talking about the U.S. government, saying that the U.S. government's attempts to get data is just like the malware attempts. We call that security intrusion thing advanced persistent threat. It's a very scary concept. It basically means that really intelligent people are always working to get at our data, and they're a threat. So Microsoft's public stance right now is the U.S. government is a threat.
Now, Microsoft.
They said it, right? Not me.
Well, the interesting thing here is they have a history. So years before any of this information came out about the NSA, there was lots of suspicions about what was going on with Skype that they purchased.
Yep.
And we covered that on GeekSpeak several times.
Sure, sure.
So there was when they changed their network from being completely, what do you call it?
Point to point, yeah. What happened when Skype actually was purchased by Microsoft, they, at the same time, around the same time, filed a patent that basically, the reason why Skype had this really interesting way of working earlier is that fundamentally it's a peer-to-peer thing. If you and I make a Skype conversation, we do find each other through some other network, but then our data is transferred between you and me.
Unlike a telephone where it goes to the central office and then...
Well, it's still going through multiple hops, but it's not going through a system that does anything with it but pass it along, okay? And that's like the network itself. So you can think of the network as potentially dangerous. It can be spied upon, but Skype is encrypted, and therefore that network traffic should be protected, okay? If you and I communicate directly. If I send my data to some computer and it looks at the data, unencrypts it, and then sends it to you and back and forth, that's not peer-to-peer. That's a service-based service. Skype is a peer-to-peer service. When Microsoft bought it, they also put a patent in place that said, here's how to tap a peer-to-peer system. And basically, they described Skype and described a way that the client applications themselves could shift the data between each other to some other third party so the third party could listen in. That's the patent that they produced. And that happened around the same time as Microsoft took over Skype. And so all us geeks went, looks like they're going to put in tapping capabilities into Skype, of course, makes sense, because if a government agency says, here's a subpoena, we want to tap your communications, How can you do it if you don't have the ability to do it?
So the perception built up at that point that Microsoft, whether they wanted to or not, was working with
the federal government to do that.
And following whatever directives they were given through law.
Right. Now, we don't see the source code of Skype. We don't know if it can do that. We don't really know if they are doing that, because to have it happen, you'd have to have some kind of subpoena or some kind of body decide to do it. So you don't even see a side effect of it unless it gets initiated. So you wouldn't necessarily know unless you were always monitoring your data. I would assume that bad guys do that, but we did see a side effect of text messages. When you and I send a text message through Skype, we've covered this on GeekSpeak, if we send a website address that no one's ever visited before, some weird machine in Redmond happens to visit that website later on. So they are looking at the data between a Skype text messaging, probably potentially also the audio communication as well.
Now they, I believe, stated that this was not a malicious thing.
Right.
That it was part of their system.
Their security
Their
stuff.
System ensuring that there's no spamming going on.
Yeah.
They have a spam blocking system built into there. But still, the point is they have the ability to. They've built the system so that it is vulnerable to listening in.
And they've patented the voice-to-voice or video-to-video ability to do that as well, which means that they looked into it and therefore they probably implemented in Skype, but we don't know.
So they have this reputation.
And
of,
I've got to say, Skype at this point is just like a phone call. And if a court decides, hey, here's an order to allow us to listen in that conversation, this is a criminal talking, I've researched it, a judge has decided, yes, it's going to happen, and that is put in place, I do want police enforcement to be able to listen. That's the whole point of our system of checks and balances. So maybe Skype should have that capability. Unfortunately, you and I can actually put together software that doesn't go through anybody else, and we can communicate effectively, securely. It's not hard to do. So that's the problem that emerges in this situation.
And bringing this back around.
Please.
The fact that Microsoft has this reputation of allowing this stuff, whether by directed by law or whatever you view of it, they have a reputation of your information not being completely secure within their networks and their computers. They now are trying to overcome that reputation because it's bad for business. So here's that mechanism again of things becoming public and companies making changes to gain the confidence of their users.
Yep. Thanks. Nice wrap up. That's good. All right. Yesterday I was stacking wood before a birthday party with my fiance, and we're stacking all the wood together, and I'm listening to a podcast that you suggested I listen to, which actually both listen to a lot. And the summary that I made of this podcast to Maggie, my partner, I said, NASA's working on faster than light travel, and it's actually in test phases. Can you please explain
okay.
How amazing this is?
Okay, science fiction. This is all science fiction. What is the fundamental law of the universe we've learned since Einstein?
You can't
Einstein?
Travel faster than light. You can't even get mass close to the speed of light, really, because it takes so much energy.
And if you were to, what would happen to you?
You would have time dilation, all these problems. You know, general relativity kicks in.
And the acceleration would splat you
against
the wall.
You tried to do it in a human lifetime, the amount of acceleration you'd have to do, the person wouldn't be living very long.
So like, there's no way we're going to go to another solar system. We're going to only get to explore our planets and
right.
see everything from
we're
the
We're lonely.
Distance.
Yeah.
Okay, so I
accept that.
I'm really excited about this, and I got to admit up front, I don't understand this.
Okay.
But
you would look through the paper.
I looked through the paper. I looked at the graphs. I looked at the...
Let's fly back to 1964
This is a good time. We're getting close to the end of the year. It's time to be reflective.
Yes.
So,
let me 1990, I think, is when this paper actually came out. Originally.
Okay. Now, there's two papers we're talking about here. So, in our lifetime, we have seen some huge changes, but they happen incrementally, and it's easy not to notice how big of the changes they are. So let's go back to the mid-60s. It came out a week ago, somebody calculated the entire computing power of the world, it was equivalent
In the late 1960s.
Somewhere in the mid to late 1960s, the entire computing power of the world was
Every computer.
If you add them all up and try to compute one problem,
right.
It's the same computing power as an iPhone 5. Not an iPhone 5S, the new one. We're talking about last year's model.
So what I carry in my pocket is equivalent to the entire processing power of the planet in the late 1960s.
All of IBM's machines, all the military machines, all the data crunching machines that businesses had in the late 60s.
And we don't know an exact date, of course, because it was a rapid time of growth. but before 1969.
Accounting for those things is difficult. But that's
and this is kind of, we kind of know this because, you know, the most sophisticated machine on the, that the humans had made, the moon orbiter and lander and all that, 1969, that processing power is nothing compared to what we have now in our phones, right? It's not even on a, it's not even a blip on
and
the
signal.
And
that's another thing. The first time we step on the moon.
Right.
Around 1969. First time we got off our planet out into anywhere else is in the late 60s. And at the same time, there's a TV show, Star Trek. Do you remember it?
I do. I love Star Trek.
Do I remember Star
As
Trek?
A plot device, Gene Roddenberry threw in there to use faster than light travel just to get around.
Warp drives.
Yeah, warp drives. So let's go forward. We've got personal computers and the instant global communication. We get into the late 90s and we got Star Trek The Next Generation.
The tablets. Tablets.
They have tablets.
Yes.
Just what do we have now?
Tablets.
You've got a tablet right next to you. It works exactly like and is as small as what they had in Star Trek. So 20 years ago, a guy... Oh, shoot, skip the name. We're running out of time.
He postulated an ability to go faster than light. He came up with a warp drive, but there was a problem.
Wait, is he called it a warp drive? It warps time and space.
It warps time and space.
Okay.
The problem with it was it required too much energy. You'd need an entire sun to power this thing. But just recently, a paper was published that showed a way to reduce the power consumption needed to do this. And I'm going to do this too fast. No one's going
to
understand
it. To make it feasible.
To make it feasible, you do a giant expansion of space-time behind the vehicle, a giant contraction in front. There's no acceleration for the vehicle, and it goes in 2 weeks to Alpha Centauri. And they're testing this theory now.
This NASA is working on warp drive and actually starting to test it.
In our lifetime.
It's amazing. Oh, fantastic. Hey, this is Geek Speak. Nice optimistic episode, I hope. I'm Lyle Troxell, and Brian Young here in the air room with me. We'll be back next week. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you're welcome to join us at geekspeak.org. See you next week. Thanks for listening. We got excited and decided to record a little bit after the show. Here's extra features. Feel free to turn off now and skip till next episode, because the audio recording of this little edition isn't going to be up to par. All right, hope you enjoy. Oh, and, you know, if you do and like this kind of thing, let us know. Maybe we'll do it more. We didn't talk about Bitcoin's drop, right? All of a sudden...
Oh, Bitcoin, how much has it dropped now?
It was like 25% last night. I haven't looked at it today.
So it's around the 700s?
Yeah. I mean, it's still amazingly high, but anyway.
Bitcoin's, I looked at it when it was six. I looked at it when it was six.
You fool.
It's overvalued.
Are you sure it's overvalued?
Yeah.
There's some people thinking it can go to 10,000. The number is irrelevant. It's a percentage game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But if you look at the amount of use, I mean, I think the best examples I've seen is that if people aren't buying groceries with it, it's going to fluctuate. Right?
People are buying real goods with it.
They are, but the percentage is nothing compared to the amount of traffic that's happening.
But the reason why it probably went up...
The reason why it's going so high is mostly based on speculation.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why it's overvalued.
I haven't seen this backed up, is that it's speculation in China. And now that the China government has issued something that is cool about it, not like saying no and not saying yes, that may be why the drop is happening.
Right. But anyway, we don't know exactly. Okay, so somebody called in, Mark from Monterey, wants to uninstall the latest AOL on Microsoft XP.
And AOL?
Like those
discs we got in the mail in the 90s?
I don't know, but what I think is great is I almost answered the call. I was going to be flippant and be like, sorry, Microsoft XP is not supported. But I decided to not take the call.
Wait, doesn't have another 6 months?
I think it does, actually. But also, it's one of those things where uninstalling, I mean, the truth is reinstall XP. Because if you've been running XP for so long that you still have AOL on it. What's that? Oh, right. Install Ubuntu. Come on, get on it.
Yeah, reinstall.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, just because...
That's not really helpful, Lyle.
But that is helpful. What do you do when your operating system is, I don't know, you've been running it for 10 years?
Yeah, I don't run it for 10
exactly,
years.
Exactly, right? So you got to stop. XP is old. Anyway, reinstall is never a bad idea. And then we didn't talk about the Android flashlight privacy issue thing.
Are people flashing lights and making things on private now?
There's an Android app.
Is our privacy so weak that a flashlight could destroy it?
Basically, actually, yes. So there's this Android app that's been very popular, and it was looking at location information.
I think
and
it's quaint that you still think there's such a thing as privacy.
It was looking at location information, and it was looking at, it had a unique identifier for the phone, and it was sending that back to the owner of the person that made the product, and he was selling it to advertisers. And there's a way to turn this off in the EULA, or you could turn it off,
right.
But he still did it even if it was turned. If he said, don't turn it off.
He ignored it.
Yeah. So that's why he got in trouble.
Stop looking at me.
So what did the FCC do?
The FTC. Yeah, I think so. I don't know. They've hit him with a shutdown notice kind of thing.
Actually, from what I heard, and I'm not, I can't back this up.
Yeah, we did it at the very end.
I can't back this up, but from the briefing I heard, it sounded like they just said they won't do it again, and now they're going to make users agree to it or not.
Right.
And yeah, that was the punishment.
Basically, he will. Yeah, it has to be.
Is that punishment?
Be more clear. I don't think so. And this guy's probably making, this person's probably making a lot of money. This company, but I don't know. The thing that's interesting to me is that on the Android device application install, it tells you what features it wants access to. This was not hacking that. It said that it was doing this. But people accepted it. In my mind, if you go and get an app that you really want and it asks for things that doesn't make sense for the app, like it's a flashlight that wants to know your location information, then don't use that app. Find a different one. Because that will change developers' perspective on what they can trade for you, right? A flashlight app is like the simplest app you can possibly make on one of these devices.
I know.
And to have to trade your privacy to use that is stupid.
I know what you're saying. But users don't feel that power. They like, oh, I
they
really
should
I
feel
really,
that power.
I really want this right now. I just need, I need a stupid light. And I don't want to have to think about like this.
Yeah, but you're trading your privacy for it. I mean, you're publicly telling
anybody where
you live.
I tell people, everybody on Facebook what
where
I'm
you are
doing.
Anyway. Yeah, that's true. All right. 23andMe, you want to cover that real quick?
Oh, God. We're doing, get to 23andMe.
So, we're recording this, too, and we're going through the stories we didn't cover. We'll throw it up on GeekSpeak.
Yeah, so 23andMe is in the news last few weeks.
Did you hear about this, Rick?
What they do, they're one of two services that I know of that you supply your genetics to them. They use a swab of the inside of your cheek, and then they run it through the machine to get your genetic code, and they look for markers, and they can figure out ancestry history, what part of the world you're likely from, what other markers from different parts of the world you have in you. My wife has got some of the most Neanderthal in her than anybody in the world. She's at the top of the percentage, which is means 3% of her DNA is connected to Neanderthal.
Whoa, that's cool.
But 97% of she's in the 97th percentile of our population of how much she has. So 97% of the population has less Neanderthal in her. Anyways, 23andMe has been doing markers that are related to health. So things like breast cancer, things like macular degeneration.
So they scan your genetic code, and then they tell you, hey, here's a flag, and this could mean that you have a higher percentage of macular degeneration or,
right.
Or
they,
breast
they,
cancer.
They will
or
tell you,
concerns.
They will tell you what the population has in average of macular degeneration.
Okay.
Then they'll say that you are, through genetic markers, more highly predisposed or less highly predisposed to getting this illness.
Right.
And they'll tell you how much more increased probability based on your genetic marker. Mm-hmm. Now, this is really cool. It could be really helpful for understanding possible health problems and maybe, yeah, you really should be taking care of your weight or you really should be taking care of something more because you are more highly predisposed to some illness related to that, something that you can change. But the problem with this is that they list a whole bunch of things that are newly known to science. So they give a confidence rating of each item. So maybe they have a very high confidence that you are at increased risk of gout or a decreased risk of gout because the studies are pretty clear. Some other illness like uterine fibrosis. Perhaps you have a increased risk, but their confidence of that is much lower. And their confidence is based on what science says about it.
Like how many papers have been published
about this issue
and attached to this genetic trait that you have.
So if they have one paper that has been published which included 10 subjects, 10 people that showed some signal that something, some genetic marker has importance. The problem with that is one paper means virtually nothing. All of one paper means is we should look into this more.
Right.
But they are going so far to say that they have this marker. They might have a low confidence in it, but what the what department controls?
The medical.
FDA. What the FDA has been talking to them for 9 months about is, hey, you are not certified for a medical device.
Oh, right.
So they have jurisdiction to say you are selling something being used as a medical device and you are not allowed to do that. So for 9 months, the FDA has been talking to them that they need to be certified or they need to stop doing this. So just a few weeks ago, the FDA had enough of it and said, okay, you're done. You can't do this right now. So over the last couple of weeks, 23andMe hasn't said anything. I believe they stopped selling their kits in that time, but maybe they just stopped marketing them. That wasn't clear to me. But just yesterday, I believe on Friday, they announced that they are going to continue to sell their kits and no for any new customers that have bought after the December or November 23rd date is when the
FDA I waited too long. Yes, what did they leave?
Any customers that bought after the date that the FDA announced they're shutting them down for medical devices will no longer get any health information interpretation. They'll still get the markers. They'll still be told you have the marker for gout. But the person is then going to have to take their genetic code to some health provider.
Some other service that is maybe licensed to do this kind of stuff.
Right.
To give you analysis of what the percentage means this or this paper means this.
Right.
Okay, so, well, I think that kind of makes sense, too. Because
it does.
I mean, you're losing the assumptions, and you're saying that some of those things are, like, low probability because it's based on a stupid paper or something.
Right. Somebody should not change their life based on one study. They should be aware of it if they are interested. So I think this is on balance a good thing, but the system has to be built up in our medical system so that people can find this information.
Now I bet they'll work.
Marketing opportunity for genetic counseling.
Well, it is, but as long as they're rated by the FDA, blah, blah, blah.
I would assume that they'll work on either a secondary license that they can sell as well that would be a medical, or some other service will come in place that will be medical-based will do this.
What I'm trying to research is find out what 23andMe's actual motivations are. Do they want to be a medical device company, or do they want to stay out of that?
Isn't it founded by a Googler or something?
Google backs it, and there are a number of other really interesting people that back it as well.
Yeah, okay. All right. Was there any of the stories we didn't get to? You prompted me for the Microsoft story. I wasn't even assuming we were going to cover that.
It was just too good of a...
I
never think of a segue, so
yes,
when it came to me, I didn't want to remember.
You can go ahead and take it next time, and instead of whispering, you can just say... this, you know, you could try to lead the segue in yourself.
I'm not that good yet.
Oh, you had the Google story.
Andy Rubin, he's known as the guy who Google bought his company called... I'm forgetting his old cell phone company. Anyways, he bought it, and that's what became Android. He did all of the... he was the top manager that...
So he's the one that came up with, like, the name of Android, kind of founded that
which
product.
Is funny.
Which is the operating system, of course, for cell phones, mostly, and tablets.
Which you have.
I do. I use it, and I have one on
and
my
you're
face.
Wearing it on your
Glass
face?
Has Android in it, right.
So back when... Before he built this previous cell phone company, he worked at Apple, and he got the nickname of Android because he's all into androids and robots.
He likes robots.
Yeah, it's his geeky thing. So he did this, basically what will now seem like a sidetrack of building the Android operating system and naming it after his favorite hobby. 6 months ago or so, it was announced that he's leaving the Android team. So
right.
People have been wondering ever since then, is he being pushed out of Google?
Right. He's like the founder of Android, and now he's leaving the team. Yeah.
Right, and they're wondering, is Google really giving up on the Android operating system and instead going to be pushing Chrome in the future? Is Android a dead line? Things like that. Well, all those fears need to be reevaluated because... It's now been announced that what Andy Rubin is actually doing within Google is Google has bought 6 robotic startups in recent years, and he's going to be leading up the team for Google's robot initiatives.
What is Google doing with robots?
Right now, it seems like they're probably related to manufacturing and distribution.
Okay.
So
is it one of those X-Lab?
Does that include Otter Coppers for delivery?
Hey,
possibly.
You know, they'll be in competition with Amazon there.
So... is that part of the X Labs process?
It's not underneath Sergey Brin's moonshot projects. It's a separate thing that Sergey Brin has nothing to do with.
Interesting.
But Andrew Rubin is the king of his own little robot empire now.
How fun. Okay, so we should see some cool stuff coming out of Google.
We can
probably know. On Android, I would assume. Android robots?
No. I don't know if that's up for...
Windows XP.
Yeah. All right, cool. Fun post. Thanks.
Yay.
Yay.